All right, ladies, buckle up.
It's showtime. It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the 40th episode of Matinee Talk. I am one of your hosts, Johnny Lightfoot, with me as always,
Julian Owens.
Today we're going to do a special episode, a little Rise of Skywalker talk. We're going to review the movie, talk spoilers, deep dive into that. Since we're doing this back-to-back, we're not doing Blu-ray releases, but what did we have at the box office?
So for the box office, I mean, it's literally not a surprise jump here, but we're going to go through it anyway. For number one in the box office was Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, bringing in $177 million. Excuse me. Next, number two, we have Jumanji with $26 million, with bringing its domestic total up to $102 million. Frozen 2 bringing in $12.9 million, bringing its domestic total up to $387 million. Number four, Cats, bringing in $6.6 million for its first opening weekend. And rounding out number five is Knives Out with $6.5, bringing its domestic total to $89.9 million domestically. It is crazy enough that Knives Out barely lost the cast with only $100,000 in the box office this weekend. But I digress.
All right, just a little tidbit of news coming off of Cats' disappointing box office. So Cats, in a unprecedented thing going on here, they're actually going back to redo some of the VFX. While the movie has already been released, this is very, very odd considering it's already disappointing returns. And I don't really understand this move. I don't understand this movie. Everything I've heard is that it's a literal litter box of a movie. But Julian has seen it, so I want to give the floor to him.
Fortunately. So I'm going on my rant for 2 minutes. I understand that Tom wants to basically redo the CGI because that's one of the most grotesque things I've seen all year. We had a year where Samuel Jackson was de-aged for 20 years. Robert De Niro, Frank Pacino, and Joe Pesci were de-aged. And we can't put faces on cats and make these cats look somewhat appeasing. I get it, Tom. You want to make your movie somewhat appeasing. But let's be quite honest with my rant. This movie just doesn't make any fucking sense. Excuse my French that I'm about to say, because I was really pissed that I spent $12, $15 on this damn ticket. How in the world? We try to make a Broadway that literally talks about cats trying to go and be angelical and having a better life and make this into a 2.5-hour movie. Like, please help it make sense. Nothing in this movie worked. It tries to do what he did in Les Mis. All the singing is the dialogue in the film. And, oh my God, please make it stop. Like, in the first 8 minutes, you start the song with how it does in a Broadway with it talking about angelical cats. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And then you realize by three-fourths of the song, they're just naming off cats. They're only naming off cats and doing choreography. And you're like, you got the best choreographer in the damn film industry. And it looks so jarring. And watching James Corden, Rebel Wilson, Judi Dench, Ian McKellen try. And I mean, you could tell that some of them were winging it and some of them were trying. That it just doesn't mesh well. The choreography and the CGI just looks bad. You can tell all of them are in unitards and they're on a fucking green screen. It mind boggles me that we had CGI this bad, and then we have Samuel Jackson de-aged 20 years again. Like, it doesn't make sense. And I hate to say it, I feel like everybody was just like, we know this is a dumpster fire, we're just going to watch this movie, and it's okay. And Johnny, because you're a cat owner, I want you to be honest, don't watch this movie. If you love your cats, please don't do it. Please, please don't do it to yourself. Because one thing is, I just don't understand also, they make these cats sexual. Very sensual. Like Jason Derulo's character, he's supposed to be this like sensual cat and the conniving. But they don't do it just to date Jason. They do it to Taylor Swift's character, Idris Elba's character. And they do it to almost everybody. And then Jennifer Hudson is supposed to be this, I hate to say it, slut-shamed Kat, because she used to have this glamorous life, and then now she's like a sex worker? Question mark? I don't get it. I'm like, how can a cat be a sex worker? Please help it make sense. And the only two redeeming qualities of the movie is Jason Derulo's wannabe acting or choreography. He could sing really well, but the acting was bad. And Jennifer Hudson singing Memories. And this is exactly why this is the only reason why Cats has a Golden Globe nomination for Best Original Song, is because of Jennifer Hudson belting out Memories. And I get it. Everything else in this movie doesn't work. It doesn't make sense. Judi Dench, and spoiler alert, Judi Dench and her CGI disgusting clown face, I mean cat face, is going in a 5-minute breaking the fourth wall scene at the end of the movie telling you how you should respect cats and how you should adore cats and how you should be a cat person. Get the fuck off my screen. No offense, Judy. I love you and everything else you've done, but this, please get off my screen. I'm mad that I was sober to watch this movie. I'm mad at the fact that everybody in this movie thought that this was okay. It's just, I never thought in many years, Johnny, that I would be like this pissed off about a movie like how you were with Robin Hood last year. This, by far, was probably the best, the worst movie of this year. The worst movie of this year. And I will probably never watch it again. I would never recommend anybody to watch this. I would tell you to go find the Broadway on YouTube and watch that, because this was a dumpster fire. Absolute dumpster fire. And shame to everybody, from Tom Hooper all the way down to the PA. Like, this was a bad movie all around. And I can't fathom. I cannot fathom. I just can't.
Yeah, sounds like a shitbox. Anyways, off of that, we're going to go in straight, into our main topic. We'll do Star Wars, yes. Non-spoilers first, and then we will warn you when we're about to start talking about some spoilers. But first, overall impressions, overall score coming out.
I think I'm going to have to redo the score on this one. I put it this way. Was it entertaining? In most parts, yes. I was disappointed by what they've done with certain things, which we'll get into in the spoiler review. But overall, it was an enjoyable film. I, for now, give it a 3.5, just because of the nostalgia, I think. But I need to rewatch it and see if it's still a 3.5 for me. What about you, though?
So, coming out of my initial watch at the 6 p.m., I was somewhere around like a 3, 3.5. The fanboy in me was like, oh, they did some cool stuff. The action's cool. It's got the most action probably of any Star Wars movie.
I would agree.
It's got the most lightsaber stuff of any Star Wars movie. And then I went at 10:30 again that same night, Thursday night. And then I walked out just shaking my head. And it dropped it down to like a 2.5. And
oh, wow.
I had tickets to like a 12 o'clock on Friday and then a 5 o'clock on Friday. I actually just skipped both of them. I didn't feel like it. So that was like $25 down the toilet. But I was like, I don't want to go. I felt like if I watched it again, I was going to get even more negative, and I didn't want to do that yet until I had some time to think about it.
Okay.
So I'm going to see it on Christmas evening and see if my pendulum sways up or down now that I've had I felt like coming straight out of that second watch, if I had watched it again on Friday, I would have just been more nitpicky on my negative stuff as opposed to just letting it simmer and then go back and rewatch it after almost a week.
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of recalibrate before watching it again because I didn't want to get too deep into the negative. The special effects are wonderful. JJ's yes. great at action. I felt like the story was very discombobulated. I felt like it was muddled. I felt like the movie moved too quickly. We didn't get to spend any real time with any of our heroes, past or present, any meaningful time with any of them. And honestly, the best part for me was the Reylo stuff, which we can get into more as we talk about it. But that was my initial feelings coming out of it.
So, I will agree with the first 40 minutes. It runs way too quick. You feel like JJ was trying to, without going into deep spoilers, it seemed like JJ was trying to redact or retract a lot of things that was happening in The Last Jedi in the last 40 minutes. I mean, the first 40 minutes of the film. And you run through so much story arc in the first 40 minutes. Then when it gets to a specific point, which we'll get to, I would agree that it slows down, but there's no character development. It doesn't give me anything for me to, in a sense, have any emotional depth into it.
Right. And there are a few moments where you could have had that, but within 5 minutes, you ruined it. You lost that tension.
Which we'll get into the sports
and stuff like that. And that really bugged me because I was like, are you, like Disney Lucasfilm, are you guys that scared of fanboys that you cower to keyboard warriors?
So
because Last Jedi got so much flack
by
half the community that you are terrified of them, that you need to, that you feel like you need to make a movie that's solely for, we don't want to get crushed under the weight of keyboard warriors. Are you that scared?
So to your point, and I'm going to use this time to talk about that because I want to go more into detail and spoilers and how I feel about how he redacted certain things in a spoiler review instead of taking the time out and you seeing what I'm about to say in this moment. I feel like even with the prequel trilogy, which I think is still the worst trilogy out of the Skywalker saga, as much as people didn't try to give it as much flack now because they think it's better or they're basically given more resonance with the original trilogy, I still think the sequel trilogy is better because even though there's a cohesive story with the prequel trilogy, it doesn't, the first two films just don't make sense, right? And I feel like what's going to happen with these two movies or this trilogy is going to be exactly what happened with the prequel trilogy. They're going to start saying, okay, this wasn't as bad as we once were. This isn't as critical as we once were and things of that nature. And George, 15 years ago, had so much crap for how he did the 1 through 3, and he still made a cohesive story. My biggest piss off is like, you didn't stick to your guns and basically say, hey, we know that this is the storyboard. This is what we feel like is where the story should go. And we're going to keep it stick to our guns, and we don't care if the fans are that pissed off about it. Because at the end of the day, one of the only IPs that will ever basically stand the test of time is Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And no matter what, because let's be honest, Empire Strikes Back got so much flack in its original initial screening in the 80s that people were saying the exact same thing, but still went to go watch like Return of the Jedi and still made a box office smash out of Return of the Jedi. Why not just be like, you know what, let's still go to our same blueprint that we had now and then just roll with that and see if that still sticks? Because no matter what happens, as we can tell from the first opening weekend, Star Wars is going to still make its money no matter what, regardless of how terrible the movie is, besides the anthology series, because that's a whole different topic. But when we're talking about like the episodes and like the saga for Skywalker, people are still going to go and watch that. And so I just feel like, for you as a company to succumb to fandom and fan service and keyboard warriors who are just basically just mad because Star Wars isn't the way that they appeared it, that's anything with creation. As an author, I'm not going to write it the way you want to write it. I'm going to write it the way I want to write it. And that's why I'm just so pissed off with The Rise of Skywalker, because you've brought in a way to basically open up Star Wars, and then you literally said, nah, never mind, we're going to keep it as closed as possible, which was one of my biggest fears going into the film, and you do that. And I agree, and it's just, it's so frustrating to see a franchise that basically dove into a way of storytelling that was unconventional, and then go right back into those ways just because of keyboard warriors. And it bothers the hell out of me, but we'll get into that later inside of the spoiler review.
Yeah, I just think that there was never a definitive vision going into this trilogy of what their plans were for the story or the characters. And I think that's one of the things, even though I don't like every Marvel movie, and I definitely don't love every Marvel movie, but one thing I will credit them is there is a backbone to all of their films. There is something that binds them all, regardless of if a movie is good or bad. There's something there where the producers go to the filmmaker and say, okay, you can make the movie you want to make, but you have to make sure you do A, X, B, y, and Z.
Exactly.
X, Y, and Z. And as long as you stick to that, we're good moving forward. And with Star Wars, if you didn't want Rian Johnson to do certain things, then you should have given him a blueprint and said, you need to make sure this, this, and this. That way you're not going back and redacting it just because half of the fan base is divided. And then what happens because you do that is you're trying to placate to two sides.
Yep.
And when you try to do that, then the plot doesn't make sense. Then you start basically handcuffing yourself because you're like, well, I have to make sure I put this in there. I have to put this in there and I have to put this in there, or else there's going to be somebody who's upset. Mm-hmm. And then by doing that, maybe you're satisfying the fans, but ultimately you're making a very incohesive movie that is, yep, is very choppy, and it just doesn't flow well. And because you have to put so much stuff in there, you don't have the time to be able to explain things. And I'm not saying explain everything, but when you open up the title crawl and the first sentence is what it is, you basically just blew up your plot right there. Yeah. And then you have no backstory as to why.
No.
Say what you will about the prequels and how there are long stretches of them which are boring and either political or boring because they're talking about the past and things with the Force. But hey, at least we got to understand what it was, what was going. Maybe it was dumb, but at least they took the time.
I got an explanation for it.
They took the time to have Ian McDiarmid just chew up a scene in an opera explaining the ways of Darth Plagueis the Wise and cheating death and all this stuff. This movie was just like, boom, first sentence of the crawl. Here it is. You don't need to understand anything else about this. We're just saying, boop, there it is. And then we'll get into more in spoilers, but there is some ridiculous stuff where I was like, I don't need everything read to me, but make it make sense.
And one of my biggest things also, agree with me if you want, my biggest concerns or biggest piss-offs about the movie was there's so much exposition, but it doesn't answer anything. And to Johnny's point, the text scroll, you're looking and you're like, okay, all right. You're giving me exposition, but how is it connecting to the previous two films? And then something happens again in the first 15 minutes of the movie that completely redacts something that specifically happens in Last Jedi. And you're sitting there and you're just concurring with yourself, this movie's about to be a redaction / fan service film. And that's how I felt about The Last Jedi, Rise of Skywalker. As much as people want to basically say that The Force Awakens is A New Hope, Force Awakens still had character development, not as much as The New Hope, but it still had character development where you can grow with characters and get something with it. Whereas The Rise of Skywalker just felt like, hey, these characters are going from point A to point B with not that much development, but with fan service. You're going to get everything that you wanted out of these films with fan service. You ready? Here's your first one. And then almost 5 minutes later, here's your next one. And it does this so throughout the film where I'm just getting frustrated while I'm watching it at 1:30 in the morning, losing sleep, just being...
It was very much like a very linear video game.
Yes.
Where it's like, okay, we have to go here and get this. Okay, now that you have that, we need to go here and get this.
Wait, that clue leads to something else.
Now we need to go to this planet and do this. And I was like, I asked my buddy afterwards and I was like, what's the average number of locations in most Star Wars movies before this? And I started counting in my head and I was like, pretty much three
or four.
And I was like, there's like
generous.
And I was like, there's like nine.
One, two, three, go back to two, four, five. Wow, you're right. That's ridiculous.
Like, why? And then we're introducing new characters. Like, okay, you're bringing back old ones for fan service, but you're introducing new characters?
Yes.
That, why?
We gotta talk about that in spoilers.
And then we're taking every character that we've already kind of liked, Kelly Marie Tran. Say what you will about the storyline she about had to Rose, go on.
Yes.
But as a character, that was a cool character. She, like, she had a reason to fight. Like, lost her sister, like, all this stuff. This is Last Jedi, spoilers, so whatever.
Whatever.
But then you're just like, huh, it was obvious. Ryan really cared about that character. You know what?
Screw it.
She's staying on the base.
Oh, my God. All right, so we're going to get into that in the spoiler point. And to that point, you... And, all right, and I guess for me, I don't know if you would agree with me, but there's a certain scene that happens towards the end of the movie, and... I'm watching it, and I guess it's just because I noticed it throughout the whole Star Wars franchise, and doing this kind of was just trying to force it. There's two scenes that I felt J.J. Abrams and Disney were forcing so much or shoehorning something down my throat. This isn't technically a spoiler for now, but I'm just giving it away. Where all the black characters in Star Wars...
Oh, where they're all together,
and I'm just sitting there wondering... That's like the woman Avengers scene that we got in Avengers Endgame, mm-hmm. that you're shoehorning that. And then, I mean, if you haven't been watching, but the kiss at the end of this.
Yeah.
I feel like
if you're going to make it that meaningless, just don't do it.
Don't do it. And I feel like they put both of those scenes to try to, again, shoehorn fan service or try to show representation. And I'm sitting there. There's ways you can do it. And you could do it in a way where it's, I would say, happy, or it was rewarding. There was nothing that was rewarding about those two scenes. It just felt like, hey, this is representation, and it was redundant, and I just felt like there was no reason for those two scenes to be in the film. And there's one particular scene where at the mid-range of the movie, like Johnny said, where you feel like there's stakes. And then there's none. And this entire film, I was sitting there wondering, and this is why I say it right now, my rating's pending. You're sitting there wondering, well, there's not real stakes here. And there's things that you pull out in this action, in some of the action sequences, that doesn't get answered. And you're sitting there just wondering, well, this is cool, but how... And why? And you never get those answers throughout the entire movie. And again, there's one specific running joke that goes throughout the entire film that never gets answered or that never gets fulfilled. I don't know if you know what I'm talking mm-hmm. about. And it's just, you do so much, you have so many loose ends by the end of the movie. It's not, I don't even think this is the end of the Skywalker saga, to be completely honest with you.
No.
And... You've let it open, unfortunately, to the point where I'm going to have to sit here and be like, you said you're not going to do any more trilogy films. I don't believe you. I honestly don't believe you. And I think that we're going to get some more films added to the Skywalker saga at some point. But I don't know. It left to me holes open. It had really decent action sequences, I will mm-hmm. say that. But story points... And character development was my biggest issue with this film going in. And that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. All right. With that said, do you want to move to spoilers?
Let's do it. Let's get over it.
So, my first nitpick on spoilers. We've mentioned it a couple times. The lack of stakes or basically flipping... the ability to maintain any sort of tension or, you know, just levity in the story and just make it mean something.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that you had that like 30-ish, 40 minutes in when you have your protagonist and antagonist who obviously still have their
tension.
Force Skype ability.
Yeah.
Force time. And then you have them doing this incredible feat of power, right? One of them is literally pulling down a ship while the other one is trying to push the ship away. And it's something we haven't really seen in in the movies, right? We've seen it in video games like Force Unleashed, which is ridiculous. Like, he does some crazy stuff that is, yeah, we haven't seen. And then there are stories in the non-canon of, like, Luke Skywalker taking out a full Star Destroyer by himself and things like that. And so you get this, and you're like, oh, cool. And then Rey unleashes the Force Lightning by accident and blows up the ship with Chewie on it. And I'm pretty sure everybody in the theater was like, oh, fuck. Like,
I was.
And I was like, okay, all right, now we're... Because now, they're okay, even if you want to shoehorn the stupid thing of making her part of a Palpatine lineage.
Which we'll get to in a moment.
But, okay, now we have this weight on Rey's shoulders. She's done this horrible thing, but the other characters still believe in her. They still are like, hey, like, it's not your fault. Like, we're going to do this for Chewie. And then within 5 minutes, they're like, oh, we've received a transmission. Chewie wasn't on that ship.
He was on a different cargo ship or a different escort ship going up to...
And it was cheap.
To, first, I forgot, Kylo Ren's Star Destroyer. And to your point, it felt so cheap. The other thing, real quick before we get into Palpatine's bullshit. One thing, too. C-3PO had a sentimental moment that I feel like JJ just redacted. And they're on a planet. I forgot which planet it's on because, again, there's too many fucking destinations in this film. They're on a planet where Poe Dameron used to be a spice smuggler, which I thought was cute. I thought it was cute. And there's a point where basically C-3PO can't read Sith-like language just because it's not in his protocol. So they have to go take him and get redacted or basically have him reset so he can read the Sith carvings on a dagger, which, again, that dagger is very important, but you just use it as a MacGuffin, which...
MacGuffins.
If it's a MacGuffin, but, again, that's what... All right. So, basically, you reset C-3PO, and C-3PO has that moment in the trailer where he says, I'm having one last look at my friends. And, basically, that happens.
And it's supposed to be a really powerful moment, because he tells them, like my programming can't come back...
Yep.
Like, there is no backup. R2 doesn't do this. And he even says, like, surely there's another way. And then she says, you know the odds better than anybody. Is there any other chance we'll be able to read this? And that's when he's like, no. And then so that's when he basically self-sacrifices himself. And I was like, okay, cool. That's a good character send-off.
Like, we don't
that's,
get it.
Like, that's it. He should have been able to read it. And then that's it. That's done.
And we then never hear
and then they're like, again. Okay, we got to shut him down because now he's
like a Sith protocol.
His protocol is not correct. We need to just, that's it. He read it and we got to shut him down. And then that's the end of C-3PO. He sacrificed himself to further the plot. But instead he hangs around and we get these stupid lines like he's...
Oh, I'm C-3PO, human cyborg relations. Who are you? He's like, friends? I don't know these friends. And as much as the running gag was... amusing. I wouldn't say it was funny. It was amusing at times. It, again, you just didn't feel any stakes. Even with Palpatine taking basically the Force life out of Kylo and Rey at the end of the film, which we'll get to in a moment, you didn't feel like the stakes were there. And for this man in Star Wars canon to be arguably one of the top three Force wielders in his prime, and being able to control as much force as he can, and taking down arguably the best Sith Lord that has ever reigned as a Sith, and for him to be killed off in such a way yet again, just was a piss off, which, again, we'll get to later. And to your point, I was kind of frustrated at the fact that we see Rey use Force Lightning, explode a whole cargo ship, and they never address that again.
No, and it's the thing is it's a very powerful moment, and you get to see what a great actress Daisy Ridley is in that moment, because she is horrified by what she just did, and it shakes her, like she is visibly shook, and then you get to see Adam Driver, who's like, oh, dude. And then they kind of redact that later by him saying like, yeah, I was trying to push you to do whatever. I think their chemistry's awesome. This kind of back and forth.
That was the highlight of the film.
Him being pulled by the light, her being pulled by the dark.
I would say being teased by the dark is the word I would use.
And teased via visions, because what's strange is the two movies preceding this one, she's not ever teased by the dark when she's by herself.
Exactly.
The only time she's teased by the dark is Kylo basically saying, "Join me," which she's always like, no, I'm trying to flip you. You're not flipping me. And then in this movie, all of a sudden, now that she's been training for one year since Force Awakens, and she's obviously ultra powerful and has been training with Leia, which I understand because of Carrie Fisher's passing, there was probably a lot more that was supposed to be in there with Leia, mm-hmm. and they kind of had to probably shoot around that. But, okay, so she's been training with Leia. She's obviously committed to the Jedi now. She's been reading all these books that apparently Luke in 30 years didn't read. And so you've set her up as this new beacon, and then you're like, but we need to have her pulled by the dark side because that's what we do.
To your point.
Why can't you just have a character who's just good?
Well, here's my point, though. And this is what I was going to explain. And there was some articles and interviews that I was listening to where JJ was like, this was her arc all along and this was Kylo's arc all along. Bullshit. But I never want to do this. And this is just, again, this is something I just don't like doing for filmmakers, because I don't want to be the creative to say, well, this is your creative mind and I want to redo it. But unfortunately, in this moment, if you're going to do some character development like that, this is what you would have done. Since A Force Awakens, you would have made her tease into the dark side since then. For multiple times, you had chances to do that. When she was with Kylo in the desert, I mean, not in the desert, on Starkiller Base, when she was striking down Kylo, you could have had a moment where she was going to the dark at that point.
Or even, she swipes him and he's obviously down. Her immediate response isn't to even think about killing him. Her immediate response is, oh, I gotta go get Finn and get out of here. He's out of my way. Like, that's all it was he's in my way. He's not in my way anymore. I'm not even tempted to try to kill him.
My point. And so you're like, okay, I can go get Finn and go right off. But you didn't give us any reason for us to believe that she would go into the dark side. Then in Rise of Skywalker, you had multiple. And Ryan, this is my favorite film of the trilogy. That's why I'm like, I love it. But if you really thought this was character development, Ryan had multiple times training with Luke to show, hey, she has this power. She has this power, and not only that, but she alludes to the dark side too much, and I don't like that.
But the thing is, you don't. You show that she has amazing power when she, you know, she accidentally, like,
goes into the dark and basically comes out with no problem.
Yep. And then Luke is like, that's a lot of power. Da 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 da. But, and then in this movie, they play it like Luke was like, yeah, I knew, and Leia knew, but we didn't care.
We didn't care that you were a Palpatine.
BS.
Bullshit. And that's what I mean by, like, story-driven. I would have basically, in The Rise of Sky, I mean, The Last Jedi, I would have had moments where she went into that pit, literally got a taste of something in the dark side, and basically just started getting angry and started going through things. When she fought Snoke, I would basically had a moment where she not overpowers, but she gets to a point where she is, instead of Kylo the one killing Snoke, she's the one who kills Snoke, and you're like, whoa, what the fuck? And then you would have what happened in the first 10 minutes, with Kylo understanding who he was, and then basically go from there. And now we have a sense of trails where it's like she has some notions of the Sith or the dark side, and we're teasing with that. And now that we find out that she is a Palpatine, that is why she's been dealing with this. But her entire character arc has been, I'm good, that's it. It's I'm the light, and I want the Jedi way, not Jedi way per se, but I want light to survive, and I want the resistance to win because the First Order is bad. What is this teasing bullshit about? And to give her the Palpatine name, it's a slap in the face. I hate to say it. It's a slap in the face because you're sitting there, again, Palpatine is this force, this evil Sith Lord who has the most evil and conniving ways, who, again, like I just mentioned, killed one of the best Siths to ever deal with the Sith race, period. And for you to give the person who is literally nothing but light a name of somebody who's just pure evil, I can see the poeticness of that, but you don't give me any justification or any reward earnedness for giving me that name. It's just, okay, she has nobody. She has parents that are nobody. And then you redact from The Last Jedi. Yeah, your parents were nobody because they chose to be nobodies because they were Palpatines and they didn't want to be their grandfather and their father. And I'm like, oh, God damn it. Seriously?
You just convoluted it. Seriously? And the whole thing was, the whole point of The Last Jedi was, let's expand the story.
Exactly.
Let's make it more than you basically, you can't be good or evil if you're not related to
a Skywalker,
a Palpatine, Kenobi, or Yoda. Like, that's one of my biggest hopes for The Mandalorian, that Baby Yoda has nothing to do with Yoda.
Yes.
That he's just also a really great Force
user. Right. He's a really great Force user, and that's it. But, whatever.
But, yeah, I mean, you... And don't get me wrong. There, like I said, there are some fanboy moments in this where my fanboy was all for it. That battle when they're, like, with the waves and everything, like, that's an awesome lightsaber battle.
Yes.
I love the way that there's that push and pull. And again, there's that moment, though, at the beginning of it, right after she sees the dark ray and the vision of herself on the throne, where they tried to push it too much into, oh, she's doing a Palpatine impersonation, where she's like, give it to me. Give me the Sith way, whatever. You can just do a holocron, but no, it's something else. But the battle itself's really cool. They're doing some cool force jumps and battling, and I like that by the end of the battle, like, Kylo Ren is beating her. Like, she's, like, winded, and he's not even trying to kill her. He's just, like,
toying with her.
Yeah. And then it's Leia realizes she's got to jump in there to save Rey, which
for her son to be saved,
to save him. And then as soon as he feels his mother die, that's when he's like, oh.
And basically, Rey,
but then Rey goes evil and kills him, or tries to kill him. And then she feels Leia die and is like, oh, darn it.
And that's when she basically does the Force heal,
which we got set up from Mandalorian, and then we set it up in the movie in case you're one of the few people not watching Mandalorian. Whoopsies. We had to set it up by having Rey heal the serpent, so that way you wouldn't be like, oh, what?
What kind of Force power is this?
And then we get the Han Solo, not Force ghost, but...
Force memory, yeah. I call it a Force memory, which is dumb, but whatever. Where Han comes back and basically tells his son that he loves him. And it's a reminiscent to Force Awakens.
Yeah, they have basically the same conversation, except for somehow...
Han says, I love you.
Han can talk to Kylo as if he knows he's not a ghost, but that he's just a memory.
Yes, absolutely. Like I said, it's a Force memory. I call it a Force memory.
Like, it's dumb as fuck, but... I almost would have preferred if you were going to go that route, then have it play out identical to Force Awakens, but then just at the last moment have Kylo do the right thing, and then you could have Han say, like, I love you, and then instead of igniting it, throw it.
Exactly. So...
I mean, it still worked. There were better ways that you could have done it, but I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
And then Kylo changes clothes into, like, his CrossFit attire.
No, it didn't make sense.
When he showed back up, I was like, oh, is Adam Driver going to, like, a CrossFit class? He, like, showed up in his Adidas joggers.
A sports jacket. And a sports jacket. The loser's black shirt, just like, yeah, I'm ready for CrossFit today, guys. And I'm like,
I was like, what? It kind of took me out. And then he went in there, and I was like, okay, like, because then we got to see Ben Solo for the first time.
Yes,
which was cool, because this is the first time we've seen Kylo not be like angry yeah. like I want to be bad so bad. And we get to see Ben Solo, which is a little bit Luke and a mm-hmm. little bit Han, like the way he kind of like smirks yes. and stuff. Yes. And I liked that. And I was like, man, it would be cool if we ever got to see, even if it was animated or a comic book, if we got to see like Ben Solo and Luke on like missions yes. kind of like Obi-Wan and Anakin back before Anakin became a dick.
Yes.
Like you got to see in like Clone Wars TV shows, like the two of them when they were actually like on good terms.
Yeah.
And to get to see like what does a Jedi with like Han Solo traits, like what is he like? And you got to see it for like 5 minutes.
And that's why it's going to be frustrating that unfortunately they set it up to a way where it wouldn't work because he's only been training and he hasn't really been on missions, but it would have been nice to see something like that. Just because Ben, his style is very cool. Granted, he
like he's cocky because like Kylo is cocky, but it's in like
angry,
passive aggressive, like, frustrated cocky. Way. Yes. Like in like anytime he fights in Force Awakens or even Last Jedi, like he's cocky, but because of his like anger and everything, it gets in his way mm-hmm. and it comes off like off putting. I still love the character. I think it's probably the best character in the new sequel trilogy.
Best arc out of everybody.
Like, I feel like his arc was the only one that was set in stone from the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we're going to have him be the bad guy, but it's going to turn out it's Leia and Han's son, and then he's going to kill his dad, but eventually he's going to become good and help save the day and die.
And that's why I was happy with what they did with Ben, and I just felt like with Rey, they were trying to find some way, shape, or form to find it connected. And what, like we mentioned when we saw the final trailer and we talked about it on this podcast, I just didn't want that to happen, and it happened. And the final fight with Palpatine, I mean, I was okay with it.
It was okay. A part of me wanted Force Ghost to show up to help her.
Yes.
And then absolutely. Another part of me was hoping that Ben was going to have a little more to do with it. Like, I don't know. I was getting some Dragon Ball Z vibes.
Yes.
When she, like, got up and she had the two sabers and they were, like, going back and forth. And I was like, oh, this is, like, Gohan and Cell.
Yep.
And then what I would have liked and I would have thought it would be kind of cool is if you had Ben Solo kind of do the Vegeta and, like, blindside the Emperor at the last minute to where Rey could overpower him. I thought that would have been cool. Like, if he would have, like, came out from the side ooh. and did a force push on him that, like, just kind of threw him off just enough for her to, like, finish him.
Or what I would have loved is because in Legends, which I wish they would have made canon, but I digress, Palpatine, as he's been using with Snoke, is using his force and putting Snoke, like, his epitome which, of his essential
they got into a bottle full of Snokes.
If you're gonna go, but here's my thing: if you're gonna go that route, adjust with it and commit to it, fully commit to it. So to their point, you can tell Ben, and I hate to say it, you could tell by when they go back to Exegol, which is the planet that Palpatine is on. Which we're gonna get to how Palpatine is even like bodily functioning at the moment. But I digress. When Ben comes back to Exegol and he just get finished with the Knights of Ren, you could tell that he's weak. You can tell like he's exhausted. And what I would have loved seeing, because again, Palpatine can take their force light, ascension, the force energy from them and put it in himself. What I would have loved to see is him taking himself, putting himself in Ben. And at that point, he's able-bodied, he's young again, and he has not only his force energy, but Ben's force energy, and you're basically like, oh, shit, this is bad. This is absolutely bad.
Yeah, but they had to give him a level up, so...
That's the point, and that's why it's like, you...
They gave him a level up, and then they gave him a glow up by giving him a new sweet velvet robes, but, which was... Huh? How does it...
Again...
You can use the force to change your clothes?
Again, that's why I was... that's why I was just like, you... You could have done really many different points of story to make this even more interesting at the end. Because I hate to say it, we've never really seen Sidious or Palpatine actually use a lightsaber, really, except he was just toying with Mace Windu in episode 3. I don't care what anybody says. He was toying with Mace Windu. And we didn't see that in this one because these two are really great force wielders and ideally lightsaber duelists as well. I wanted to see Darth Sidious as soon as he basically took their energy being like, let's have fun. And basically, like you said, have a point where it's getting weak and you see that Rey is not about to win this. And Ben does something to help her to defeat Palpatine. But you get this point where she's using Leia's and Luke's saber with the Force Lightning against her grandfather. Going and using it and retracting it like Mace did in episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. And give him his own version of electricity back on him. And the electricity got so bad to the point where he evaporated himself.
Yeah, and I mean, they had to do the whole Disney Marvel movie thing with the giant beam of destruction going into the sky. Oh, God. Only this time it's not from like a generator or something.
It's actually from Palpatine.
From Palpatine. And it's whatever. And I mean, speaking of the Knights of Ren, you didn't give them anything to do to this lead up. Like, I would have preferred you saw them do something where you're like, oh, those dudes mean business. That way, when Ben actually beats them, it's more of a big deal. Like, you kind of showed it early on when he was trying to fight him hand to hand, but you're like, it doesn't matter how powerful he is if he's... But then, you know, they did... So they have the Force Skype, but now they also have, like, the Force where I can email you objects.
I thought that was the funniest shit ever.
Well, I actually thought the fights between them, where they were going back and forth, where it was like, oh, they're transporting themselves between both areas, and like, and then they showed, like, because of the helmet, like, oh, objects can transport too. And then it was like, oh, we're going to use this as like a little email. I'm going to message you a lightsaber.
That's why I was laughing, because for me, was it a cool concept to see them basically force Skyping each other in the lightsaber duels? I think that was actually a very crazy sequence that I enjoyed. One of the few moments that I enjoyed in here. But to your point, when Darth Vader's face comes back onto that planet 3A, I'm going to call it for now, that they throw it and Darth Vader's face comes on there and they're like, oh, you're in my Star Destroyer. All right. Hey, Stormtroopers, let everybody know that Rey is on my starship, and I mean on my Star Destroyer, and don't let her leave yet. And you're just wondering, okay, cool. Then, to your point, you're at the moment, and you're like, oh no, this is going to come into play later, isn't it? Link up. I'm going to give you your grandfather's lightsaber. You ready? Okay, now I can defeat the Knights of Ren. And to your point, the Knights of Ren are slowly but surely at every planet that they're on, but you don't give them anything to do. You don't give them any stakes to make it seem like, oh, Poe, Finn, and like Rey are in trouble with the Knights of Ren. And again, I guess this is a nitpick. Sorry, we're going on a tangent, but if the Knights of Ren trained with Kylo, who is a lightsaber wielder, wouldn't you suggest that they would have weapons that can retract or get away from a lightsaber by any chance? Just out of the curiosity, wouldn't you want to have that happen? I don't know. I was confused by that. And I was like, okay, so now you not only make the Knights of Ren nothing, but you also have them just get cut up by lightsabers like they're bread and butter. And I was just like, okay, all right. They were completely useless this entire trilogy, yeah, just like Phasma.
It's one of the reasons why I dug the Praetorian Guards in Last Jedi, because they had those vibro weapons, and you're like, oh. And then, like, they were actually doing damage to Rey and Kylo, and I was like, and those things could block lightsabers? So yes. I was like, okay, so they're formidable. And so that's why it was a big deal when, and both of them at different times during that fight were in, like, real danger. Like, one time, one of the dudes had, like, that dagger at Rey's neck, and she did the Arya move before, you know, and before Arya did. And then the whole move where Kylo had the dude on him and he didn't have the lightsaber, and Rey did the chucked it to him, and he just blasted his head. Like moments like that where you're like, oh, they're one of them could die maybe. In this, both her fighting, I guess, Palpatine's new guards, and then Ben fighting the Knights of Ren, you're just like, oh no. Yeah, they're just taking these dudes out like it's a video game. And that's which is fine. I mean, it's lightsaber fighting. I mean, it's about as meaningless as in the prequels when Jedi are fighting battle droids. Yeah. except you've built up the Knights of Ren since Force Awakens as like this elite fighting force.
And they get cut up like butter. And it's ridiculous to me. And that's why, again, I harp on the idea that there are really no real stakes on here. And you get upset, which I don't mind you bringing Snoke in. I mean, not bringing Snoke in, but Palpatine in. But give me a good reason why Palpatine's here. And you just literally say, Palpatine's back. Okay, what the hell
does
that
mean? I'm trying to think, like, I think the only death we got from a known character was Snap Wexley, whose X-Wing crashed. Oh,
no. Yeah, that's the only... Wow. Yeah, you're right. Wow.
Even Dominic Monaghan survived.
Yes.
Despite his obvious jab at the Holdo move. And I was
General
like,
Hux.
And I was like, don't get me started on General Hux. So they have... And this is going to be really brief, but they have Dominic Monaghan when they're like trying to figure out what they're going to do for this battle, and it's obvious jab at Last Jedi where you're like, why don't we just pull the Holdo maneuver? It's like how are you just taking a jab at one of the coolest scenes in like Star Wars ever, where. And it, obviously one of the most beautiful shots ever with sound Absolutely. And visuals Absolutely. And a meaningful sacrifice, because without her doing that, your ass is dead. So in light of that, I probably wouldn't joke about that.
That was one in a million chance. That could never happen. Shut the hell up.
And then Hux.
Oh my God. So
I know I he it. Hates Kylo, but... He
to be a traitor
the first
and a spy,
order.
Right? To be a traitor and a spy for the First Order.
How? And the way it happened, and to try to make it funny, I was like, "This is just stupid." I would have rather it been some no name, one of the people at the table.
That's who I wanted it to be. So you know, you had Grand Admiral Tarkin 2.0 come in, and I guess that's the reason why JJ wanted Tarkin 2.0 in, because he's way more menacing than Hux, because Hux.
They made him a joke
since Force Awakens, so I get it. I completely get it. But you wouldn't have gave him that Nazi speech in Force Awakens and have him do everything that he was doing in The Last Jedi for him to all of a sudden change his heart to be a spy for the Resistance? And your reasoning was because you just want to see Kylo Ren lose?
He's like, I don't want you guys to win. I just want to see Kylo Ren lose.
I'm like, that's the dumbest thing ever.
What kind of Nazi are you?
And then Tarkin 2.0 is like, oh, okay. All right, that's what happened. Hey, can y'all do me a favor? Doom! Tell Kylo Ren that I found the spy and he killed him with one quick strike. I'm like, that was a waste. That was an absolute waste.
Yeah, because there's been traitors in the Empire before, and one that comes to mind is from Rebels. There's like a high-ranking Imperial who eventually becomes a spy for the Rebellion, yeah. But there's constantly stakes where you're like, oh, is he going to get found out? And he starts the Rebels series being like one of the main bad guys, and mm-hmm. then after his encounters with the Rebels, slowly realizes that He's in the wrong,
exactly.
Whereas this is just petty and stupid.
And I can go days on of how I feel about General Hux. But yeah, all in all, I like I said, before we continue talking about all the cons, like you said, my pros are basically Kylo and Rey fighting in the forest moon of Endor, one of the moons on Endor. Fighting in or somewhat telepathically
force fight.
Yes. And I would say the Millennium Falcon, as much as I kind of don't agree with it, but the Millennium Falcon doing multiple space jumps to basically get rid of the TIE fighters was pretty dope. Some of the sentimental moments, but real quick, how'd you feel about Leia her whole character arc and all the CGI that they gave you through that. How do you feel about that, though?
I mean, I don't mind it. I feel like this was one of the few things where I think they were going towards this the whole time.
Okay.
And I think it was pretty powerful because you needed to have somebody train Rey, and I thought it was going to be like Force Ghost Luke, but to have it be Leia and then to bring up that, oh, she was trained to be a Jedi,
yeah,
which in the Legends, she was trained to be a Jedi, but then she didn't quit because of a vision. She quit because she wanted to focus on being a politician and making the galaxy a better place and felt like she could do that better in politics than being a Jedi, so she stopped being a Jedi. I didn't mind it, but I mean, it's one of those things, like her having the vision that if she continued on this path that her son was going to be evil.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things kind of like in Game of Thrones with Cersei, like when you have a vision and so you try to do things on purpose for something to not happen, then it's always going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things too, like Anakin, he kept having these visions of Padme dying, and so he did what he thought he was supposed to do to save her, but it ended up inadvertently killing her. So it was fine because we've seen it plenty of times before.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was severely lacking, not due to the filmmaker's fault, but you know, they made a choice that they were not going to bring in another actress for Leia. They made a choice, we're not gonna CG her, as it were. They did the young Leia, but they were like, we're not gonna do a CG Leia.
But even in those scenes with real Leia, you could tell that they basically had one scene where it was
filmed. Well, they cut in Rey from now,
yeah,
with Leia from then.
You could see the splicing, and it kind of was jarring at times. I would say that. And my other thing is, you could have gave me somewhat shape of an idea that Leia was training before this film.
Because, I mean, we saw her, and to some people, they made it into a meme and a joke, the Mary Poppins Leia. But when I saw that, to me, that was, oh, so she did get trained to use the Force.
But, and to your point, I'd agree with you. But also at the same time, I feel like for not us huge Star Wars fans, but as a average moviegoer, give me an explanation. Like, tell her, or say how, like, Luke was like, hey, you know, you remind me of my sister when you were training, and then we get a flashback to them training. You could have did that in The Last Jedi, in a sense, or in The Force Awakens, give us a reasoning like how she knows the Force and things of that nature. Just do cookie crumbs. So where we get to this point, you're not shoehorning the fact that Leia was trained in the Force and then she just gave up, because like you said, it's not really rewarding. You're just, again, shoehorning exposition to me, and I don't know. I don't mind it, but then I guess I was confused. Not confused. I was a little bit like, sure, I can go with it. Rey being trained by Leia, and I'm kind of like, okay, you've stopped your training, but you're teaching somebody how to train as a Jedi. And I kind of was okay with it for a little bit, but then I was just
It's been done before. Obi-Wan stopped. Luke stopped. It's been done before. It didn't bug me. I thought it was meaningful that her death was also Ben's rebirth. And then it was kind of neat that they both joined the Force at the same time.
Yes.
And that the whole Reylo thing, I mean, I shipped that a long time ago. I knew that was happening. That's why every time, like, you could tell they were trying to make Poe or Finn looking like they were going to make moves, I was like, man, yeah, they really don't understand. She's seen this dude with his shirt off. She's been sold.
And I thought
that the moments between those two characters were genuinely good, both with them arguing over Force Skype. I mean, it's totally sexual tension between those two.
It is very much sexual tension. And when they finally kissed at the end, I was like, okay.
Well, and then even before that, when she heals him after Leia's death, because he had asked earlier, like, you wanted to take my hand, and he, like, reached out to her again, and then she ran away.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go to the moon of Endor, and they fight, and then she heals him. And then she says, I wanted to take Ben's hand.
And I was like, aw, that's cute. That's real cute. And you get one, I would say you get the only real sentimental moment in this film was when, basically at the end, after Palpatine gets obliterated by Rey, I guess, used up all her life and killed herself after she fought her grandfather. And so Ben is clearly upset about the situation. So he found a way to learn how to use the same force abilities to give his life to hers. And for a brief moment, she comes back to life, and you're like, aw, and they kiss.
And then he smiles.
And they smile. And I could tell from that moment, say, Ben's not about to make it. And Ben basically dies right in her arms. And that's one of the only sentimental moments you get in this film, and you're wondering, wow,
it was good because it was very much, and I can't think of the story, but it's the whole thing between, like, star-crossed lovers. They obviously, they love each other, they care about, they have this connection, but they're on opposing sides, and it always seems like they're not going to be together. And then that was really the only, like, real meat to this film, yep, was him giving his life for her. And then, and literally doing that. And then them coming together right before he died. It's part of, like, an old tragedy, you know, where that happens. They finally are on the same terms. And then, but he has to pass.
And that's why I didn't mind it. I enjoyed it. I liked it a lot.
Yes, because that was one of the things I was afraid of, was going into the movie. Once it happened where he brought her back, I was like, and they kissed, I was like, oh, he's about to die.
But he's gone. Exactly.
But my one fear in this movie, because I always knew they were going to redeem him, but my one fear was they were going to redeem him, but he was going to survive and go, and they were going to be a nice, happy family. And I was like, no, he's done too much atrocities, killed his dad, who knows how many other people he killed. He literally killed that one dude and brought his head and threw it on a table.
Yes. And I'm just like, yeah, you cannot keep him alive, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. In terms of storytelling, you couldn't.
I mean, you redeemed Vader, but you didn't keep him alive. You redeemed Kylo, you didn't keep him alive.
So that's fine. It's justice.
And
the final scene, what you
epilogue
feel about it?
I call it the epilogue, where Rey goes to Tatooine and buries Luke and Leia's lightsabers in the sand outside of the house, which, good on whoever is around there, because someone came around and cleaned their bodies. And then you had this random old lady who just happens to be walking through the desert.
Who are you?
Who are you? I'm Rey. Well, what's your family name?
Your family, what's your full name? And then she sees
Luke and Leia's Force ghost, and then Skywalker.
Rey Skywalker. And then
she ignites the yellow lightsaber.
Which, I'm very excited that we finally get to see the yellow lightsaber in the live-action franchise.
So part of that, it's obvious that her lightsaber was made by one of the ends of her staff.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was listening to another thing. So yellow crystals are extremely rare.
Very rare.
They were only used by the Jedi Temple guards back in the day. And it was basically somewhere between blue and green. So you had, like, the guardians and the thing. Or yellow was if you took a damaged red one and you purified it. Yep. So I was like, did she go find Kylo's lightsaber with the unstable crystal and purified it.
Yeah.
And that's basically her keeping a connection to him.
I want to say it's that one. I want to say it's more poetic.
Because I think that would be more poetic, that, like, okay, he's dead and he died Ben, so I'm going to go find his
Kyber Crystal.
Kyber Crystal, and I'm going to and purify it.
And I think that's the... I was going to say, I don't want
to
say...
I would read that comic.
I would exactly. I would love to see that, because that would be great. And I would love to see, as much as, again, I know we're not done with the Skywalker saga because of this, I want to see Rey training, and I want to see Rey going on missions where she's actually a full Jedi now. Oh, one other thing, Notion. When she got knocked down by Palpatine, one great moment I enjoyed is every Jedi that has been in the canon came out and basically said something for Rey, including Sam and including Freddie Prinze Jr., but Ezra wasn't in it.
Wasn't there, but gosh, I can't think of her name. Ashley Epstein, Ahsoka.
Yes, Ahsoka was in there.
So I was like, oh, does I guess that means she's dead?
I mean,
Because all the other ones that spoke are dead.
Are dead. That's what's like, Ahsoka must have died.
But then does that mean Ezra's alive?
Interesting thought, because Ezra wasn't alive, but Ezra wasn't in that Force imagination, but Ahsoka was, which mm-hmm. means maybe he is somewhere alive. Okay, I like that. Maybe, hot take, Disney, if you're listening, what if Rian Johnson's trilogy is about Ezra after the Rebels? I'm down. If they do that, or Revan, one of those two, I'm down. But I enjoy that, and even I was like, Sam, is that you? And Hayden Christensen, I don't know how they found Hayden, but they got Hayden to do it, and everybody basically came and did it. I was pretty enjoyed by all the actors who came in and did that scene. I was like, oh, okay, this is how you wrap up a 9-episode mm-hmm. saga. You put everybody in here. Yeah, I thought it was pretty dope, and I think that's pretty much it. Oh, even though this was in Legends before, and we've seen it in comics, Chewie gets his medal finally from A New Hope. We've seen it already, but it was just nice for fans who don't really explore in the canon like we do, that they saw that. It's like, oh, well, that's before, but sure, okay, I'll let Chewie take that. So that was cute. I think everything else was just serviceable. Like I said, there's so many like nods to the other films. Lando saying, I have a bad feeling about this. A few other like nods, like Kylo and Han's dad, we already talked about, and a few others. I think it was cool that they kind of did that, but again, it was just shoehorned that almost every 5 or 10 minutes we got some kind of fan service material, and that just mm-hmm. was like, okay, fine, all right, whatever. But I still thought it was enjoyable. Like I said, it's as much as you can tell from the hour and a half, I think we're close to an hour and a half, the hour plus we've been talking about this, we do have our concerns, but I still think it's better than 1 and 2, but I don't know if it's better than 3.
That was my initial consensus coming out, was definitely better than 1 and 2. I'm going to have to give it time to see
if it's better than 3. Okay. Yeah. And overall, let's ask the final question. Would you rewatch it as much as you've done all the other films besides 1 and 2 and 3? Because I know you don't like 3 as much.
I actually don't mind. Like when I went back and I actually rewatched all of them leading up to going to this. So mm-hmm. I did 1, 2, 3, Solo, Rogue One, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and then went to see this. I mean, I would probably watch it about as much as I would watch 3.
See, I don't know if I would.
I would say I would still prefer to watch, obviously, the original trilogy. I really dig Last Jedi. I don't care what anybody says. Every time I watch that thing,
it gets better with time.
Even the parts I've disliked since it came out, I don't mind. Like the Kando Bite stuff, I don't mind. The DJ stuff, I don't mind. I hated him at first. Now I'm like,
okay.
No, he makes sense. He's literally teaching Finn a life lesson and Rose a life lesson. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. I'm going to see it again tomorrow. And
I'm probably going to see it when I'm back home in Boma, because we are recording this before Christmas. So I'm probably going to watch it again and see if my consensus is still the same. I would probably put it at the moment, I have it right behind, right over 3.
So but, do I.
But I'm going to have to rewatch it again to see if I still will hold true to that. Just because, in my opinion, I actually enjoy watching 3 from the second half on. When Anakin turns, from that point on, I love episode 3. Whereas with this movie, there's a lot of sprinkling good moments all throughout the film that I'm enjoying. So I think, consensusly, I might still have it over 3. But I digress. Any final thoughts before we head out?
No, that's it.
All right. Well, Johnny, where can the kids find you?
You can find me at Johnny the Wonder on Twitter and Instagram, and Johnny Boy Wonder on Letterboxd.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at King Julian Owens. When we come back, do you want to do the top 10 movies of 2019?
Yeah.
We'll be in a new year, but we'll be able to do that. So, guys, we'll see you guys in the next year. Enjoy the holidays, and see you guys next time.
Later.